This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Well, today on Dreamland, we are going to be talking to somebody just like me who has a beard and a few other things that are different, but one thing we have in common, we both are close encounter witnesses, big time. And you'll see later, Paul has had some injuries to his body that are very similar to some that I've had. And we will show the images on the show later, side by side. This is real, folks. It's not real. And it's not theoretical. It's not spiritual. Or it is spiritual. But believe me, not always. And sometimes not in a good way, and sometimes in a good way. Paul Vidal, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Whitley. It's really, really exciting to be here. It's honestly, it's an honor.
Well, thanks. It's an honor. Excuse me, folks. Just a second while my chair collapses. Probably all kinds of horrible things will happen during the show because I hope not. I don't want any electronic glitches. Powers that be, glitch us not today. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you. It's an honor to have you here, too. And it's also wonderful that an experiencer is sitting here face to face with his name on the on the screen with you folks, because we are going to be more and more taking our own lives in hand. We've been beat up enough. It's time to accept us. Accept us. And I'm speaking in particular to the scientific and academic communities and the government. Now, I can understand the government being a little iffy about this because, after all, this went on for years, a threat from above that was taking our eggs and semen. And the Air Force not only didn't do anything about it, but somebody, the Air Force or the CIA or whoever, I don't know who, went on a campaign to discredit us. Right now, the FBI is out there quietly trying to interview close encounter witnesses and saying they're going to investigate the abductions. Come on. Their only purpose is to produce a report that the big media will eat up, the New York Times, the CNN, Fox, all, maybe not Fox, but most of them will just eat up. And that report's going to say the FBI investigated these abductions and they never happened. That's the point, folks. So if you get contacted, if some people already have, with the nice note, we want to help you, they don't want to help you at all. They want to continue the pain. That's their only job. Their job is, and this has been a long time coming, but it's true now, their job is to protect the government, not the people. Okay. When it comes to this, I mean, they've got other things they do that are good. I won't say it's all bad. But when it comes to this, oh no, forget it. Oh, Paul, okay, let's go. Well, I want you to tell us a little bit about your background. You look at me, a guy of my age, you look about 14. How old are you, actually?
I'm 33 years old. I'm born and raised in New Jersey. I've been interested in this topic for as long as I can remember, certainly as long as I've been able to read. I essentially learned to read through taking out books on UFOs or Bigfoot or the paranormal, you know, back when I was in grade school. And it was only later in life that I truly came around to the subject, but yeah, it's been a lifelong process for me.
Now, it's interesting that it's been all this. Is there any, when did you really start? You learned to read on it. You must have been like six, really young. So was this something in your early life, do you think? Have you had any indication of that?
Yes, I have had an indication of that, and I wonder more and more as time passes whether I might have had a lot more contact that I'm unaware of from my childhood years. But yes, I did start reading around that age. At the time, it just seemed like an inexplicable interest of mine. You know, I used to watch Unsolved Mysteries religiously, sightings, etc. I used to take out those Time Life books from my school library.
Well, but those were good. I remember those fondly.
Yeah, fantastic and great for children with all the illustrations and things like that. So I was inexplicably or not inexplicably drawn to the subject. As far as I remember, I just have one paranormal incident from my childhood, and it was this encounter with what some people have come to call the Hat Man, essentially a shadowy figure, tall, with a trench coat or a cloak or something to that effect, and always described with this wide-brimmed hat, almost like a bowler cap or something like that. I don't know if that's the word, but not quite a fedora, but a wide-brimmed hat. And there are thousands and thousands of people that have encountered this entity. I was not aware of that until fairly recently, even though this encounter occurred when I was about 5 or 6 years old. But yeah, later in life, I did some reading and discovered that this is a very widespread phenomenon. And in fact, I opened up to my father about this only to discover that he and my uncle had an almost identical encounter with this same exact entity back in the mid to late 60s when they were living at my grandparents' house, sleeping in a bunk bed. So yeah, that was my earliest encounter with anything strange.
Okay. So it goes back a bit then, and tell us about the actual this figure.
Sure. Well, all I can say for sure is, as I remember the incident, was that I woke up in my bedroom at my old house where I grew up in northern New Jersey. And this figure was standing in my doorway, extremely tall. Like I said, it seemed to be almost reaching the top of the door frame. It was just standing there kind of looking at me, menacing me. I didn't notice any facial features, nothing like that. But it seemed like kind of a three-dimensional shadow. It seemed very physical or quasi-physical. Uh-huh. And as I recall, I just like leapt out of bed, dashed past it, ran down the hall to this TV room that we had and hid underneath this this yellow electrical heating blanket that we had at the time. And just like a child would, I hid under it. I peeked out to see if he was gone or if he had followed me. And as far as I could, and when I peeked out, he was still there. He had apparently followed me into this room and was still just standing at the entrance to this other room, staring at me. And that's where my memory ends. And, you know, following that, my parents, I told them about it. They convinced me it was a nightmare. I believed that for a very long time, but the memory always stuck in my mind. It's actually one of my earliest childhood memories.
And did you remember anything about what happened with him? What?
No, I don't know if anything happened. Generally, from my research, it seems like this figure is more of a watcher type for whatever reason. It rarely seems to interact with people. Even in my father's case and my uncle, they were sleeping on a bunk bed. This was back in the 60s again. And this entity walked into their bedroom that they were sharing and just leaned over them. And that's it. And now some people would, you know, try to write this off as what people call sleep paralysis and kind of buzzwords like that. But that does nothing to explain shared encounters such as both my father and uncle had, nor the widespread phenomenon, which is this particular entity, in my opinion.
You know, I'm trying to, what happened to you later? You had other experiences, I believe.
Oh, yeah. So.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we can get into that. So my interest, you know, continued, like I said, in the years following that, I learned to read. I became very obsessed with all sorts of these anomalous subjects. And then I think somewhere around my teenage years, I began to lose interest. I don't know exactly why. Maybe I just bought into some of the materialist, reductionist paradigm, which is so prevalent in our society. But for whatever case, I did lose interest a bit, but never entirely with whether it's UFOs or any paranormal subject. That is until my mid-20s. So this would be about 8 years ago, I began to experience all sorts of strange activity, everything ranging from other type of shadowy entities at first, and then eventually alien visitations or abductions, out-of-body experiences, general sort of hauntings and telepathic downloads, all of that stuff. It all just kind of hit me like a wrecking ball at this particular time when I was around 25 or 26.
What was changing in your life at that time?
You know, I think what it really was my mental state. I was going through a bit of a traumatic time on multiple levels that I don't necessarily need to go into here, but suffice it to say that, well, I had just had a difficult breakup with my long-term partner at the time, and that combined with other things that were happening in my life did lead me into a deep depression. Fortunately, I recovered fairly quickly from it. I'm all the better off for it, I think. I learned a lot, but it was during this time when I began to experience, you know, these paranormal things again. And little bits and pieces of memory began to come back, too, from my childhood. But so it started with another shadow entity encounter. I'll just very quickly run through where this is the first one I remember. Again, I was about 25. I was staying at my mother's house at the time. She has since passed away in 2022. But I was staying at her place and I was sleeping. And I woke up in the middle of the night one night and I heard a voice at my bedroom door. And it was a male voice and it said, "Can I come in?" And I was paralyzed with fear, and I don't recall even responding. I just know that this shadowy being walked into my room, got onto my bed, crawled towards me, and started trying to strangle me or smother me or something to that effect. And it was absolutely terrifying. At the time, I had still not really been, I had not gone through my flip, to quote Jeffrey Kripal. I had not right. yet fully embraced, you know, the reality of these anomalous phenomena. So I did write it off as some strange nightmare or sleep paralysis or something like that. But I no longer feel that way. That was just my rationalization. So that progressed. I had a couple other incidents like that until I learned to kind of fend them off, I guess you could say, these entities. You know, I learned certain techniques to keep it from happening or to make them go away. A lot of the time it just came down to just saying like, "F off, go away, something to that effect. And it was shortly after that, maybe a year or so later, that I began to have these alien experiences.
Now, wait a minute. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to use the solo layout so that you know people can really concentrate on what you're saying instead of watching me listen as well. Now, but things must have been changing in some way. First, you've had a long period of time when you've been sort of unsure about it. You're listening to the world's denial. And then you get to the point where you're not listening to the denial anymore. And that's an interesting change, because you're, on the one hand, you're reading UFO stuff from an early age. On the other hand, you're kind of wanting to make the sleep paralysis thing happen to you. I mean, you're wanting it to be that. I remember when I was in the craft with the visitors being screwed with, I was trying to believe it was a nightmare, trying to make myself believe that. Now, when did you begin to stop wanting to make yourself believe that? I guess that's the way to phrase this question.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I hadn't quite thought about that, but I think the sleep paralysis experiences themselves kind of awakened me, in the sense that I gained a lot of sympathy for people like yourself and, you know, the many other experiencers out there who report things like alien visitations, because all of a sudden I was like, wow, this was absolutely real. You know, this felt realer than real in some ways. So I gained a bit of sympathy. I was also, I guess, reaching a stage in my life where I was a lot more interested in spiritual traditions and practices. I was getting into yoga for the first time, as well as meditation. And just that alone will do at least two things. It will open your mind and body to things that you might not have otherwise perceived, and then it will also, well, similarly, introduce you to a lot of concepts that you might not otherwise be aware of. So I was just gaining an overall more metaphysical conception of reality. I was becoming more open-minded and curious, and so it really all led up to that bombshell December 2017 article by Leslie Kane, Ralph Blumenthal, and Elaine Cooper, where after that dropped, and in the months leading up to it, I started paying attention to the subject again, the UFO subject specifically, and it almost felt like that article gave me permission to engage with these things mentally, with these subjects. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think it was a combination of different things going on in my life.
Yeah, and also a different atmosphere, because when you saw the article, what did you think? You thought, my God, it's real. That's what you thought. Yeah.
Exactly.
And you're like, you know, the government is sort of backed into accepting that truth. I mean, they've admitted that some of these things are unknown, but there's a huge gap here. It's between us and the article. And we all thought to ourselves, anyone who had doubts about their experiences thought, my God, I have been in something at Israel. But the government thought, I think, only, okay, we've gone this far. How do we keep these unwanted people, the close encounter witnesses, out of this? How does that make you feel?
it's incredibly frustrating, you know, to this day, especially with everything going on with the most recent error report and so forth. At the time in 2017, it was incredibly exciting. It seems like maybe we were finally getting somewhere. And I do still think that we are getting somewhere.
Oh, hey, wait a minute. Folks, free Dreamlanders, here's the latest break. And remember, to buy the books that we're selling and stuff, you know, you don't get a lot of ads on this station, on this podcast, just my stuff. And you don't get on Unknown Country either. So respect that, please, and subscribe to the show, because that's how we actually keep going. We'll be right back. We're talking to Close Encounter witness Paul Vidal. Paul has had numerous experiences in his life, and we're going to be getting to some of the physical effects in a short time. Let's go back to the way it makes you feel. The other thing is this: because of the government denial and the media's snickering, or guffawing, depending on which media it is, or just ignoring us, which is a big part of it. Like, for example, I haven't had a review in the New York Times in more than 20 years. And maybe it's because they don't like my books, but I was regularly reviewed. And then after communion, I was regularly reviewed. And then suddenly it just stopped. And at that same time, there was a hardening against this whole thing. And I'm talking about back when you were a little bitty baby. So this goes back a while. That was the time when South Park did their first episode about and made my rape into an international joke. And it became the rectal probe instead of the rape of Whitley Strieber. And that really shut people down. It shut the public down. It shut the Close Encounter witnesses down. It made people, it silenced people, because people don't like to be laughed at. And somebody somewhere sensed that. And they decided to do whatever they could to hide this. So, and now here you are sitting here. And I just wonder what it was like to decide not to hide it.
Well, yeah. Whitley, I remember when that South Park episode came out. You know, I was probably a young teenager or something, and I probably lapped along with it. I don't know. I wasn't a huge South Park fan, frankly. I never have been, and I never, you know, considered the broader reality here. It's incredibly unfortunate how this stuff plays out. But I will say this, I've been laughed at. I've had people laugh in my face about this subject, particularly when I first started talking about it back in late 2017 and early 2018. I was attending college at the time. I went to college a few years after graduating high school, so graduated a little bit later in my mid to late 20s. And I remember being so excited about this subject and talking to my peers about it. And just literally being laughed at, having people question my sanity, like all of that stuff. So, God, I can only imagine. I can only imagine your position.
Did you receive any life harm because of it? In other words, you say laughed at. Did anything happen that harmed your life?
Not physically, but I have lost friends over this. I lost one of my best friends due to this subject. They, I guess, just didn't believe me or didn't want to believe me that I was actually having these experiences. I felt gaslit, and I think I was being gaslit. And, you know, I was still going through the process of coming to terms with the fact that I was an experiencer myself. And so, throughout the course of that, I lost one of my best friends. And it's been difficult.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I've talked to many, many experiencers in my life, and Anne had too, and we noticed something about them. Many things that are unique to experiences. One, generally pretty mild-mannered people. And you think to yourself, well, you get a group of them together. We used to have Dreamland festivals, and most everybody in the festival was an experiencer. And Anne would say, they're so mild-mannered. And I said, of course they are. The visitors are a little invulnerable. They don't want to get people in there who are going to be raging and stuff. And she said, well, you did. I said, well, of course I did. But for whatever reason, they had no choice but with me. They had to have me. And in any case, there is a kind of personality that's involved with this. But there's, in addition to the mild-manneredness, and you're expressing this too, there's an extreme sensitivity to separation. Like you're talking about how much it hurt, or you talked about a bad breakup earlier. You're talking about how much it hurt to lose this friend. These things hurt you more than they hurt most people. And me too. I'm broken up by the loss of a friend, or I recently lost a whole family. I was hopeful that they would be friends, and because I love to have friends, and I don't have many, and so I feel it too. Have you noticed that much among other close encounter witnesses? Because I'm acutely aware of this. It's like we're terribly sensitive to separation.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely, I've noticed an overall sensitivity among experiencers. I almost feel like I have a psychic connection to other experiencers sometimes, but that's a bit of a different story. Yeah, but as far as that goes, yes, especially, well, I think it's true for experiencers in general. I find the ones that are still sort of in the closet, so to speak, about it, that they're almost the most bashful in some ways, because you know that they're maybe still going through a process themselves of coming to terms with what may or may not have happened to them. And then the ones that speak out, like I have and like you have, I think that it hits us very hard, and I know it has me, this type of separation. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's maybe from a lifetime of feeling, again, sort of gaslit. I know that term gets a little overused, but...
What do you mean when you say gaslit, what do you mean?
Just made to feel that you can't trust your own sanity or that you can't trust your own perception. You can't trust yourself in a way that people tell you, oh, you know, whether you're five, 6 years old like I was and... You know, I don't blame my parents whatsoever, but saying like, you know, it was just a nightmare, or whether it's, you know, my peers, you know, literally laughing at me, or whether it's the doubting that we do to ourselves, or at least that I did to myself when I was first coming to terms with this. And I know from reading Communion that it seems like you went through at least a similar process back in the 80s.
So absolutely. Well, I still do.
Yeah.
I was in Texas a week ago and with my family and friends, and people were laughing up their sleeves at me the same way they always do. Snickering. And I've had to endure that now for most of my adult life, and including from some of my closest friends. And you know, if you want your friends, you have to accept that from them. And I just keep thinking to myself, if things were different, if this was more open and more accepted, think what kind of therapies and treatments we could have access to. Therapies that haven't even been invented yet. We represent a revolution that is being buried alive, basically. That's what we are.
I could not agree more.
Yeah. We need to get into the... wait a minute. Let's do another break here. Okay, for the free side of Dreamland, we're taking a break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. We're talking to Paul Vidal, a close encounter witness, and we're kvetching basically about what it's like to be a close encounter witness. And it's time to get down to the nitty-gritty, Paul.
Let's do it.
And start talking about just what happened to you that is the big things that brought you into this, because the shadow man didn't do that. Something else did.
Yes. Yes. So, like I said, things began to escalate in my mid-20s. Various shadow figures went away. I really have not experienced that since. So it's been several years. And it would... So that began back in 2016. And around 2018, I had a very profound experience very quickly, where I once again woke up in the middle of the night, and my whole house was lit up somehow with this kind of amber light, and I was not paralyzed or anything. I was wide awake, not dreaming, and I sensed a presence in my house. And I was once again actually staying in this home, my deceased mother's home, and I felt this presence walking toward my bedroom. I don't know how I sensed it, I just did. There was also this profound, eerie sense of familiarity, like this had happened before, and just this knowledge that they were coming for me, whoever this was. And as I felt this presence reach my bedroom door, all of a sudden, all at once, I both heard and felt this unbelievably profound vibration start to spread throughout my body. It seemed to come from the window behind me, again, which faced outside. I was sitting in an armchair at the time, which was also odd. I thought maybe I dozed off in this armchair. It was very strange. But this force that seemed to be coming from outside, just behind me, it was this sort of a vibrational sensation that was both a sound and a feeling. And it was kind of like a generator kicking on, kind of like a womp, 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 womp. And it got louder and louder and stronger and stronger. It started in like my solar plexus and then spread throughout my entire body. And I tried to fight it. So it was utterly terrifying, and I had no idea what was going on. I thought maybe I was dying, or the thought crossed through my head that I might be getting abducted by aliens. For the first time, this thought came to me. This was February of 2018, so it was a few months after the New York Times article. And so as this was happening, over the course of about 30 seconds to a minute, this vibration noise spread throughout my extremities. I tried to fight it, but eventually became paralyzed by it. And then this black static filled my vision, and I lost consciousness. I then woke up about 4 to 5 hours later, no longer in this armchair that I was in, but now I was laying in my bed across the room. And I was wearing a flannel similar to this one, and it was strangely unbuttoned, where like the middle buttons were unbuttoned, exposing my chest. And I was laying like this, like a mummy. And I felt like I was coming out of anesthesia. My arms were laid on my exposed chest. My sheet was like gently folded off of me, you know, and I just slowly came back to consciousness and was like, what just happened? What was that? And I was utterly baffled. I got out of bed. Like I said, I was staying at my mother's at the time. Eventually, I went and told her about it. That led to a whole other series of stories where she revealed to me that she had experiences like this. And that was that. So at this time, I did not see any entities, but that quickly changed. So to get to the point that I think we're driving at here, where did the flip occur to me? Again, to borrow the term from Jeffrey Kripal, where did I start to awaken to the reality of this stuff? Well, that started it, and then and that started it. That launched me into this scene. I could not stop reading about abductions, visitations, UFOs, all sorts of paranormal stuff, you name it. And about, so over the course of the next 2 to 3 years, from 2018 to 2021, I had several experiences that I don't think we had time to go into here, but they were very alien-like in nature. I had one experience where an entity spoke to me telepathically and stuck something down my throat into my stomach. I had sort of little sightings of what appeared to be gray beings. And then eventually in 2021, once again, February of 2021, this was the big one, I woke up one night and I saw the silhouette of a small being standing near my bedside. It looked exactly like your typical gray, although I could not see its features this time. It had the bulbous head, 3.5-4 feet tall, and it was just standing there. And at the same time, there were these vibrations. It seemed like the atmosphere of my room was charged with some sort of vibration as I laid there staring at it. So 2 days after that, I woke up from a completely dreamless sleep, which is very unusual for me. I dream virtually every single night. I'm a very active and lucid dreamer, and I keep a dream journal. But I woke up from this dreamless sleep, and I felt this pain on my left leg, the back of my left leg. It was inside of my calf muscle. And it was not on the surface or anything. It was inside of the muscle. So my first thought was, oh, I must have pulled the muscle in my leg in my sleep, like I had gotten a Charlie horse or something from stretching too hard. But that doesn't make sense to me because that's happened to me a few times in the past. And I will always wake up when that happens because it's so painful if you've ever pulled a muscle in your sleep like that. So
we're going to take another brief break for our free Dreamlanders. And when we get back, we're going to go into these injuries and we're going to show at that time a picture of, we'll bring up a photo of Paul's scratches and one of mine and side by side. Should be interesting. So stay with us. We're talking to Paul Vidal. He is a close encounter witness and experiencer in the middle of telling us an extraordinary story. So let's just keep on, Paul. Go right ahead.
Okay. So I wake up 2 days after seeing this seemingly small gray alien figure beside my bed. That just a silhouette that time. 2 days later, I wake up with this pain inside of my muscle. Initially, when I first woke up, I did write it off for at least the first few minutes of waking. I just thought, oh, it was a Charlie horse or something. I didn't look at it or anything at the time. It's probably, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes later, I was getting dressed, you know, getting ready for the day. And as I'm putting some pants on, I happened to glance at the back of my left leg and saw these, what appeared to be eight little dots, eight little scabs in a nearly perfect line, very neatly staggered on the back of my leg. And I was completely taken aback. I was dumbfounded, especially because prior to this, I had been suspecting that I might actually be a real experiencer. I hadn't quite come to terms with it, but I was looking for a sign. And I almost wonder if maybe the visitors answered that request by providing a physical sign in this manner.
Well, I have a place on my leg, on my right leg, which they attend to quite frequently. It's a little, you will be seeing it now on the screen, those of you who are watching the video. And for those of you who aren't, it's a neat round spot on my just on the side of my inner calf muscle. And it has been there for about 10, 15 years, I guess. And every once in a while, there will be a needle, tiny, extremely thin needle put into the center of it that I barely feel, and sometimes I sleep through, I'm sure. What it does exactly, I don't know. But one night, I woke up and was aware of the fact that there was something in the bed with me between my legs. And since I have no animals in the house, I naturally quickly concluded that whatever it was, it shouldn't be there. And I leaped out of the bed, leaving the two scratches you see now, and we're putting them up beside Paul's scratch. And it's similar, but his looked more like punctures. And was that how they were punctured? What happened in my case is I jumped out of the bed. The being leapt out of the bed. I probably a gray at the same time, because naturally it had been in there, and it wasn't going to stay there a long time, and shot into the bathroom like a rocket and was mm-hmm. gone instantly. And the scratches were from these at least have long fingernails. Claws almost, and the scratches were from those. So but go ahead and tell, let's continue now with your story, and we'll pull the pictures off, and what you saw, what those of you listening only didn't see were the pictures of Paul's marks and my marks side by side.
Great, yeah. So I do think that they were puncture wounds. That's why I mentioned the sensation inside of my muscle. Frankly, what it felt like was what you'd call an intramuscular injection, just like you would get if you were having a vaccine or various other treatments from a doctor. Not subcutaneous, but deep, deep, deep into the muscle. And it was not a throbbing or radiating pain. It was the type of pain where every time I would flex the muscle, I would feel it. If I was just stationary, I wouldn't feel anything at all. And there was absolutely no topical sensation. In other words, nothing on the skin, no feeling on my skin, no itching, no pain or anything like that. And I also think that they were puncture wounds or something to that effect because of the spacing of them, the clear lack of a laceration or abrasion in between them, and just the evenness, as well as the way that they looked in the subsequent months. Like Whitley, you mentioned that this round spot that you have is still there 15 years later or something. I actually still have scars. They're incredibly faintly visible, but I still have scars a full 3+ years later. I don't know if they're going to stay there forever, but that's a long time for anything natural. And I should also mention that there was 3.5 feet of snow outside at the time here in North Jersey. You can confirm this, you know, if you look up the weather back in February of 2021, and this place was immaculate. So there was no chance that that it was a bug bite or anything like that. I've also shown it to medical professionals, and they all agree that it looks very strange. And I've been given the opinion that they almost look like a biopsy, like a deep sort of biopsy of some type.
Biopsy. How interesting. Free side of Dreamland. Goodbye. Goodbye. I'll see you again next week. I love you very much. And subscribers, we're going to keep right on keeping on. Okay, so the situation is this, that you did you have any physical effects afterwards? In other words, besides the marks themselves and the pain that you've described, was there any change in your physical feeling, your body sense or anything? Do you feel exhausted or anything? Tell us about that.
Yes. Some of that took place in the few days following. Initially, though, just that day that I took the picture, that picture, by the way, which viewers will be able to see, was from the exact moment that I noticed them, the morning that they appeared. And the only real physical effect was that prior to this, and I can only speculate, but prior to this, I was dealing with some sort of problem in my leg at the time where I was getting like a twitch in my calf muscle, kind of a thumping, and it was really troubling me. And I was on the verge of going to see a doctor about it and get, you know, an x-ray or something like that. It had been going on for a few months, and then the day that this happened, that twitching went away completely. And it was in the exact same area as the markings, except on the opposite side of my leg was where the twitching was. So that was.
Your sense of it maybe that it was some sort of a medical intervention.
Exactly.
Well, that's what I think happens to me all the time with this mark on my leg. I think these are all medical interventions. In fact, I get these unbelievably intense allergy experiences, and the visitors show up and they put that needle in my leg. I'm very still now because I'm often awake when it happens, and I don't move a muscle because I want it. And then the allergies will be gone for a long time. It used to be gone that they would be gone for 6 weeks or so. But now they're gone and gone and gone. I haven't had an allergy attack in 2 years nearly. It's not been that long. Last October in England, I had a terrific allergy attack. And that was the last one. I asked them that night. I said, look, I'm dying here. You've got to come in here and help me. And they came into the flat I was Airbnb-ing, and they did it. They stuck something in there, and it hasn't come back. So it's
real. I've done the same thing. I've asked them to come back, and I don't know that they always have for the same reason, for some type of medical aid. But, yeah, I completely agree that it was some type of medical intervention. That is my suspicion. And the only other thing that I've noticed is that, similar to you, Whitley, I used to get colds very frequently, very, very like nasty colds. And since that happened, I have not gotten a single cold except for one time. And I don't even think it was a cold. I think it was a sinus infection last year in the summer when I was attending Contact in the Desert. Which I know you will hopefully be at in the near
future. I'm going to be there for sure this year. It's May the 29th to June the 3rd, folks. Contact in the Desert. I will certainly see Paul there. And by the way, if you go to Contact, you want to see the mark and feel my implant, you're very welcome. Just to ask. I'm not shy. I'm not out here to be a celebrity. I'm one of you, and I'm out here to be with you and us to be together. That's the whole point. So I don't hide.
Well, I look forward to seeing you there, Whitley.
Me too, to seeing you, Paul. I'm going to give you a big hug as soon as I see you.
Great. Yeah, so that's just something worth mentioning. And then I will close off this chapter by adding that the very next morning after these marks appeared, I woke up broad daylight, not middle of the night this time, about 7:30 in the morning or so, light shining through the blinds, and I saw a gray alien standing at the foot of my bed again, roughly the same area, and just like you described, Whitley, it rocketed out of my room in the span of about 2 seconds. When I woke up, it was already in motion. I think it had kind of like an O face, like its lip. I don't know if they have lips, but its mouth seemed to be pursed. Its tiny little mouth and its arms.
I've seen that too.
Exactly. Yeah. Almost like, I don't know if I surprised it by waking up when I did, or who knows. Its arms were slightly outstretched, and it was very, very white. I think the sunlight made it look whiter than I had seen in other experiences. It did an L-shaped formation from the front of my bed. It went like this, right behind me, and either disappeared or went straight through my bedroom door. And that was the next day, the next morning. So it was basically like a post-op, you know, medical investigation or something. Yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
I wonder what they did. You know, they could have been doing anything to you. They could have been stopping that, you know, when one of the doctors said they looked like a biopsy. Mm-hmm. And then you had pain down there before. And I'm just thinking to myself, maybe they stopped a disease of some kind.
That is in my gut. That's what I feel happened. And when I,
done that in my case, plenty of times.
Right. And my late mother too, when I told her about this, and this was what really, you know, blew her mind and mine and the rest of my family to varying extents. Both of my parents are experiencers, especially my mother was, my grandmother too, on my father's side. But my mother revealed to me that she's had medical procedures from these small grays. In fact, she was not familiar with, you know, the image of the gray alien particularly or this subject whatsoever. But after this all occurred, I showed her the cover of Communion, that classic cover. And she was like, yep, that's exactly what I've seen during her experiences. We don't have time to go into that, but yeah, I do believe that they are performing medical procedures on my family for some reason.
Tell us about her and her experiences a little bit.
About all I can say is from what she told me, you know, I wish she was still around. We only got to talk about it in the final years of her life, a couple years. But she basically described to me that she would be levitated out of her bedroom. I don't know if this home, it's this the same place that I'm recording from. I don't know if it's a hot spot or what. It kind of seems like it. But she would be levitated through her window, and she told me up into the sky, she would see the clouds and stuff, and I believe she said she felt she was on some type of craft, and she would see both small and tall grays, and her exact words were, she thought they were doctors, and in the case of the small ones, she called them like little doctors.
That's amazing, because that's what the kids at our, we were going up to the cabin and these experiences were happening. And I would tell all the parents the whole story. And they were all fascinated and amused. And none of them believed a word I said. And their kids would come back and say a flying saucer went through the Strieber's front yard and stuff. But the kids called them that, the little doctors. And they would shine lights on their arms and they would say, we are looking at your soul. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and sort of go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you too much, I just thought I needed to kind of add that. So go right ahead. Let's go. Your mother and the little doctors.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate that. You adding that. That was really about all that I got from her in terms of alien contact. We only spoke about it a few times, but she was very adamant. She was very much in her right mind. And when we spoke about this, and none of the events occurred, you know, none of the events occurred during a particular time of duress or anything, at least from what she told me. So she also had some near-death experiences. And I suspect that she might have visited me at least once or twice in the year and a half since she passed. But her near-death experiences were quite interesting. And I'll just quickly say that the one that really stands out was that she almost died on the operating table from kidney failure during a certain stay at a hospital where they gave her a bad medication. And she left her body and she encountered my grandfather, who passed away when I was 5 years old, maybe 4 years old. And as she told me, they were touching index fingers. It's kind of fun or silly, but when they were touching index fingers, they were somehow connected. And he took her on a tour of the universe, I guess, and showed her other planets and like other life forms. And it was just the whole thing. And then at the end, you know, she didn't want to leave. She wanted to stay with him. But as you so often hear in these near-death experience reports, she, my grandfather rather, told her that you have to go back. And so she did. And she went on to live for another 10 or 11 years before she finally did pass away recently. And she was a very low-key spiritual person. She didn't talk about it a lot, but I still have her copy of Dr. Evan Alexander's Proof of Heaven sitting next to me right here. And I could dig it out if you want, but it is here. And in any case, I think my nephew scribbled on the cover, but Proof of Heaven, great book. She was a very, very low-key spiritual person, very interesting. And yeah, I think I'll leave it at that for now. But if you'd like, I could go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. My mother was a Catholic, sort of old-fashioned, very conservative Catholic in many respects. And my brother has all kinds of dreams in which I'm usually, there was this certain, in our country house, there was this certain place that you didn't want to go. It was a little draw and it had these rocks in it. And it was creepy. And he has recurring dreams of me being dragged away down in there by these visitors and then running back to the house and telling mother and mother saying, well, he shouldn't have gone down there. We told you not to go down there. But those are dreams. Mother in daily life, and once I saw a UFO above the house at night and it was just hanging there. It was sort of one of those things that you can see and not see at the same time, kind of. And I said to mother, I was on an upstairs porch and her bedroom was just right there. She could have walked out the screen door and right onto the sleeping porch. I said, you should come out and see this flying saucer. It's up in the sky above the house. And she says, I don't want to. And I've always wondered if that was because she had something going on. I just don't know.
Right.
How about your dad? You haven't mentioned him at all.
Yeah. So he's actually more openly interested in this subject, but doesn't identify as an experiencer quite as much. I think he's starting to now that I've become more involved with the community, but he had just one experience that at least he's told me about, just the one where it's quite interesting. Actually, he was in college at Slippery Rock College in Pennsylvania, and he was levitated out of his dorm room. He would have been maybe 20 at the time. And he encountered the small grays and he was taken somewhere. I think he said it was a dimly lit space, which is similar to the times that I've been taken by the grays. It's generally been a very dimly lit space too. And I can go into that if we have time, but he was taken on into one of these spaces, maybe a craft, who knows, by the grays. And he at some point was shown a vision of my older sister. I just have the one sibling, Melanie. And he saw a vision of her at the age of 3 before she was ever born, before she was ever conceived. This would have been like 4 years before my mother was even pregnant with her. And after my sister was born, and I've asked my father this, he was like, yeah, that was her. It looked exactly like her. So I have no idea why the Grays would do that, why the visitors would do that. I want to ask him more about it, about like his own personal interpretation of it, what he thinks about it. But as of yet, all I really have are the bare bones, you know, is the bare bones story.
Pardon me while I fight to come back. I couldn't get it to work. Okay. Well, we have it's interesting. Both of your mother and your father experienced levitations. Have you? And I think you mentioned you have too. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So, one time very profoundly, at least, if not more.
Well, tell us about the one. I don't think, am I wrong? I don't think you described the one time very clearly. No. Yeah, go ahead and describe it then.
Sure. Yeah, if we have time, I'll go into my two most interesting experiences, the first being levitation. So I was, I lived in Los Angeles.
We do have time. Okay. Never fear.
Great, great. So I recently moved back to New Jersey, you know, where I'm from, a little under 2 years ago. Prior to that, I was living in Los Angeles for exactly 4 years. And so I was living in an apartment at the time, and this was before I got the markings, actually. So this was between the vibrational experience and the markings. I think it was 2020, during the pandemic. So I was increasingly having these experiences, as I mentioned, a few here and there. And I was getting more interested in it until one day, so like I said, I was living in LA, and I had started to experience what I would call, I called it getting pinged. In other words, I would feel these vibrations, like I was like some kind of external force was attempting to pull me out of my body, pull my soul or my consciousness, whatever you want to call it, out of my body. And for a long time, for months, if not longer, I would fight it. You know, I would force myself awake or roll over or something and fight it until eventually I just relented. I was like, okay, it seems like something wants to make contact with me. I'm just, you know, next time I feel that ping, I'm going to lean into it and let it happen. So I did this one day when I felt the ping, and I basically levitated. I guess I think I was taken out of body. I don't think it was physical. I'm not sure, but I don't think it was. I levitated up through all three stories of the building that I was living at in Hollywood. And I saw the whole thing. I saw myself go up through the first floor, the second floor, the third floor, above the roof, up into the sky. I saw the whole LA skyline sprawling out beneath me. And then I felt myself zooming at a very quick speed through space until I found myself in a dimly lit room, a dimly lit place. I assume maybe a craft. I have no idea. But I was in this place, and I didn't really feel any fear, which was interesting. But and then I started to hear these clicking noises, kind of like a these hissing, clicking noises, and then I see a what people call a mantid, a sort of praying mantis being. I see its face fade into view directly in front of me, staring directly into my eyes. It was green in color, maybe greenish brown, and I, again, didn't feel fear, which is very strange because I always felt fear with the grays, which will be relevant with this story. So its face appears in front of me, the clicking noises stop, and then in my head, I remember saying, hello? And then I heard audibly this very friendly voice, male voice. I describe it as like a salesman, and it said, hello, literally just like that. And I was confused, and I said, what am I doing here? And then it said, well, we saw that you were here, and so we thought we would show you around. And I heard that word we, and that caught my attention. And I in my head, I said, we? Are they here? And by they, I instinctively was referring to the grays, even though this was actually the very first time that I saw a gray. Spoilers. But I somehow knew that he was referring to the grays, almost as if this had happened before. But I was only aware of it in this moment. So again, I said, hello, hello, what am I doing here? We saw you were here, so we thought we would show you around. And I said, we, are they here? And then the mantis just said, yes. And at that moment, I kind of like moved my eyes down because I think I was paralyzed. I looked down and I saw just the heads of two small grays standing on either side of this mantis being. They were just standing there. They almost looked like they were kind of smirking for some reason. And they were just standing there. And at that moment, I could feel my heart rate go up. I did become afraid where I wasn't prior to this. I became very afraid looking at the grays, and I felt my consciousness fading. I felt the experience destabilizing and going to black. And as that happened, the mantid said one more thing. It just said, "Goodbye, Vidal." And that was it. I found myself back in my body, back in my bed.
How interesting. It's like you were taking them just to to show it around. In other words, you were taken in order to bring back a story.
Right.
And you tell your stories very well.
Thanks.
And I think that that's a huge part of why we're all doing what we do.
Yeah.
The good storytellers are the ones who have memories and who decide to take this into the public, which gets me to my next question. What is your public presence? You're in, what group are you in and so forth? I know you're in a group. Leslie Kane, who's interviewed you for something, as I recall, told me you were.
That's right. Yeah, so I have a decent presence online on different social media platforms. I'm part of the Experiencer group run by J. Christopher King. I have attended all but one of his co-producers' conferences, the Inquire Anomalous conferences. I am also active on Twitter, although increasingly less these days because it's a very toxic atmosphere, in my opinion.
They all are trolls back in, and now, of course, they all seem to have. Boy, I never look at any comments on Twitter anymore because they're so creepy. Whoa.
I know. It really saps your energy. It's really not worth it. You know, we need to, we're trying to improve the scene, not make it worse. You know, we're trying to become less marginalized, not more. And all this constant vitriol and hatred and just negativity.
It's very sad. Yeah.
It's very harmful.
Guy, what's his name? The electric car guy who's in the news a lot.
Oh.
Rocket ship, electric car.
Elon?
Musk is now owns Twitter. He changed the name of it to X.
I know.
I think it was a X. So now it has a stupid name, and it's also all the trolls have come back.
Yep. It's the stupidest name. But yeah, so I'm active on there. I'm in a few Facebook groups. I'm very close to starting some sort of outlet of my own. I really am, either a blog or maybe a YouTube channel where I can speak more about this stuff and really kind of give my own take. But for the time being, I've just been participating in other people's projects. I've been on a few podcasts on YouTube and you know, some other very exciting projects that are, you know, yet to come.
Yeah, the people involved have told us, well, you can't talk about them yet. Mm-hmm. But they're not secret at all. I mean, it's just some contractual thing or something. It's no mystery. Getting back to your experiences, is there anything we haven't covered yet?
If you don't mind, I'll tell you one more story.
Yeah, please do. Okay. This is why we're here. This is why you and I are here. We are here to tell our stories.
I know. And I, to your point earlier, I really do feel like we are meant to tell our stories as experiencers. I almost sometimes feel like we are maybe ambassadors, not the right word, but I kind of like that word, or maybe intermediary, something like that. My background is in English. I have a bachelor's in.
I have to say that there are very few ambassadors who start their embassies walking a plank.
It's very true. Yeah, I'm going to try to think of a better term there. I love words because I'm a linguophile. Like I said, with a background in English, so maybe that contributes to my storytelling abilities. But anyway, my other most interesting experience, in my opinion, occurred in 2021. about 6 months or so after I received the puncture wounds or whatever those were. And before I go into it, I just want to add again, I've had a bunch of experiences. During that week where I got the puncture wounds, there was more happening. There was other activity. You talked about like something being on your bed in between your legs and not owning any animals. I do own animals, but I had something very similar to that happen to me, where I felt something crawl onto my bed and I kicked it off and I thought it was my cat, and I turned on the light and my door was closed and my cat wasn't in my room. So I've no idea what that was. I also had a blue light shined into my bedroom by what, what all accounts seemed to be a UFO. It was almost like there was a portal in my room or something, and I could see through the portal that there was a triangular UFO actually shining a blue beam, excuse me, into my room. So there was a lot that occurred during that week. That's the gist of it. And then a few others after that. Before I go into this last story as well, I want to make one thing clear, which is that ever since I had these experiences, which often involved out-of-body sort of phenomena and vibrations like I've described, almost like the atmosphere of the room itself has changed, as well as these vibrations pulsing throughout my body, I paid a lot of attention to that and did a lot of research into that, and eventually stumbled upon what people call astral projection or out-of-body experiences, you know, the Monroe Institute, all of this stuff. And through the course of my research and my experiences, I began to develop my own method for, let's say, going out-of-body. Although I want to be very clear that I don't view my modality or my protocol as the same thing as an out-of-body experience that somebody has when, say, they're in a car accident or they die on the operating table. It's not like a near-death experience. It's nothing like your typical leave your body and float around this physical world. Sometimes it is quite similar to that, but it's a bit more complex. In any case, that's been like one of the really positive things that has come out of all of this for me. I almost feel like the visitors, either on purpose or indirectly, ended up teaching me to practice these certain protocols, which essentially are just it's a meditative protocol that I will do first thing when I wake up in the morning. And I'll usually set an intent the night before or the days leading up to when I want to do it. And then I do a very simple breath-based meditation, which will lead to a vibrational state, as they call it, which I then focus on in the course of my vibration. And that ends up leading to these out-of-body experiences, during which I've seen all sorts of amazing things, heard things, felt things. It's a full sensory experience. And I've also encountered entities during that. And maybe I'll end on that after I tell this story. So this event was very, very intense, probably the most intense one that I've had. I was still living in Los Angeles at the time. It was, yes, summer 2021, I believe. And I was having a hard time sleeping, kind of tossing and turning, getting up, having a drink of water, going back to bed. I don't know why. Maybe I ate some bad food that day or something. Eventually, I laid down trying to go back to sleep, and it was as if the exact moment that my head hit my pillow, I was instantaneously transported somewhere else. Again, I think it was out of body, not physically. But who knows? I sometimes wonder if these entities can like literally stop time and take you somewhere else. But whatever the case may be, I found myself feeling like I was transported, again, into a dimly lit space. All I could see was a wall in front of me. No, just completely featureless, just a wall. And then in front of that wall materialized a small gray alien. Typical gray, big black eyes, bulbous head, it was almost faintly tannish or greenish even. It was not wearing any clothing of any type that I could notice. It's possible that it had maybe a skin type thing that I couldn't perceive. It had fairly defined muscles, although it was quite, you know, skinny and all of that, but I could sort of see some musculature. It was just staring directly at me until, yeah, it was staring directly at me for a few moments, and then I noticed it, and I just became utterly terrified. I just went into, like, a pure animalistic fear mode, like fight or flight. I was just like, oh my god, it's finally happening. On one hand, I was like, it's finally happening. This is like an alien abduction. On the other hand, I was like, this can't be happening. This can't be happening. It must be a dream. It must be a dream. Despite all that I had been through, despite getting those markings a few months prior, I was like, a part of me still wanted to deny it. And so I was trying to wake myself up. I was telling myself, wake up, wake up, wake up. And I could not do it. I didn't really feel physically paralyzed or anything. And it was nothing like a sleep paralysis incident. I was somewhere else, but I wasn't moving. I was just kind of like this, sitting or standing, staring at this entity. So as I'm doing that, the entity, it started to glide in this very hard to describe motion. It glided to the left of my field of vision, then it glided to the right of my field of vision, and then it settled back in the center where it started, about 6 feet in front of me. At that point, I heard in my head this telepathic voice, which sounded like a voice that you would hear coming out of a walkie-talkie or an old radio. It was kind of staticky, and before the voice appeared, I started praying, and I was not raised religiously at all. I am a spiritual person, but not particularly religious in the sense I don't practice any religion. Nonetheless, I was praying to any deity I could think of to please make this stop. So as I'm doing that, I hear this raspy, staticky voice say, "Don't do that." And each word was highly enunciated, each syllable. "Don't do that." So then I tried to calm down. I took it to mean, like, stop freaking out, basically. And so I calmed myself down. And then the voice said, "May I set you down?" Or possibly, "May I sit you down or send you down?" It's kind of hard to make out that part. But it said what it said. And I think I gave, like, a silent affirmative response, at which point the gray approached me, and I was still kind of paralyzed with fear, but I reached my hands out, like, to stop it from touching me, but it still came towards me, and as I reached my hands out, I managed to feel this entity somehow, this gray, and it felt very kind of rubbery or spongy, like foam rubber or something to that effect, and so then it continued to approach me. I couldn't see exactly what it was doing, either because I was partially paralyzed or because I didn't want to look at it, but I could see its arms moving. It was doing something. I couldn't feel anything. That this went on for about 30 seconds to a minute. I was terrified the entire time, just wanting it to stop. Finally, it stopped. It backed up to where it started, 6 feet in front of me, and it just said, "Welcome." And at that point, the experience faded out, and I once again found myself in my bed.
You know, isn't that is such a familiar thing. You're welcomed, and then sent away.
Right.
That happened to me years before any of this started, back in the 1970s. I found myself in either an actual movement to another world or in a lucid dream. And I've written about this in something, probably A New World would be my guess. But in any case, I've written so many books, I can't necessarily remember exactly which ones I've written things in. In any case, I was at a university in another world. And I really, really wanted to go into it. And at the last moment, two grays showed up and said, I couldn't go in. I couldn't matriculate. And it took me, I woke up in tears in the morning. I was just devastated. And Ann was saying, well, look, what about me? And I said, well, I didn't think about that. She said, well, I'm glad they threw you out, because what if I didn't have you anymore? And then I felt really, wow, I love you so much. And but I realized then later, being thrown out is being accepted. In other words, when they said to you, welcome, and then sent you back, they were actually saying, now your life with us is starting.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
That was 2021, like I said, and it's just so crazy.
And so here you are, your life with them has started.
I know. And your interpretation is spot on, that that's exactly how I felt at the time, that I had been initiated.
You had been initiated, exactly. And that's what the whole close encounter experience is, folks. It's initiation. Initiation means overturning of your past life. It is discovering something new, and it's devastating. It's never easy. If you look into shamanic initiations of the past, many of them were very dangerous. Life is on the line. Like which one? I'm hopefully going to remember the Native American tribe that did it this way, where someone wanted to be a medicine man. What they had to do was jump off a cliff. And if they lived, they were right. If they died, they were wrong.
That's the thing about those shamanic initiations. It's not even usually a desirable, it's not often a desirable thing from my understanding. No.
Well, of course, as I did point out in Afterlife Revolution, we are in the midst of having a huge amount of shamanic initiations on planet Earth, because people die and are brought back from death by medicine. Mm-hmm. Every one of those is a shamanic initiation. And Anne was a perfect example. I mean, that lady back there became a shaman after her NDE. And she had the NDE only because of medicine. She would have died even 5 years before. She would not have survived. And look at what happened afterwards. I mean, she became an incredible presence in the world, and then after death, an incredible spiritual presence. Mm-hmm. And speaking of incredible presences in the world, Paul, you are that, an incredible presence in the world. Thank you. Very quiet, unassuming guy with an awful lot of powerful stuff to convey. And I don't say stories to tell, because there's been energy conveyed in this show, and I can feel it, and I'm very grateful for it.
Thank you, Whitley. I really appreciate that, and I feel the same way. I feel like this is important, what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I just really, I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Well, maybe I'll certainly see you at Contact. And are there any more? Do Jay and Leslie have any more of those things planned, do you know?
Yes, they're only in the planning stages, but Jay at least has said this publicly, that there is more to come with those conferences. Hopefully we'll find out more later this year.
Good, because I was a speaker at one, and I've missed a couple of the others because, you know, I said to Leslie, do you actually look at my calendar to see when I can't go, and that's when you set them up? But I'm hoping to go again. I'd love to see everybody again. And you know, maybe one of these days we should start having the Dreamland Festivals again, because getting experiences together is a really, really lovely thing. There's something very beautiful about groups of us together. We fit.
Totally.
Anyway, totally. Well, Paul, thanks so much for being on Dreamland. I loved it. Folks, I hope you did too. And Paul, come back again someday if you have more experiences, or just to be with your brothers and sisters in the experience and all of those who are interested in watching from the sidelines. It was a lovely experience to have you with us. And folks, don't forget, Contact in the Desert, I'll be there May the 29th and June the 3rd. Paul will be there wandering around. Don't miss him. Come up and say hello. You can't miss the beard. And
nope.
A very nice beard, by the way, a cool beard. Okay, so thanks, and also everyone, thanks as always for being with us on Dreamland in this extraordinary adventure that is called The Experience.
Thanks again for having me, Whitley. You take care.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Strieber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Strieber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.